Hi everyone, welcome back to Bite Marks. Today in our Bite Marks special episode is a very special guest to talk about a very interesting game. Say hello to Hircha Mamabola.
Hi everyone, my name is Hircha Mamabolo.
Oh, Mamabola, and, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. And I play a lot of games, and I just happened to play Control and 100% completed. So today I'll be your expert on that.
Yes. Hircha here is one of the rare gamers that I've met who actually has managed to 100%, you know, beat Control, which is, you know, quite something because I think Control is a very interesting game. And I love games like this, but before we actually... before we get into all of that, we first need to talk about, okay, well, what is actually Control? For those of you who don't know, Hircha, why don't you please introduce that to the audience?
Oh, okay. Well, Control is primarily an action game, a shooter, made by people who make shooters, by Remedy.
Yeah.
And surprisingly enough, it is also a Metroidvania game.
Ooh, yeah, that's very interesting. There are not too many shooters that are Metroidvanias.
Yeah, so there's a lot of backtracking and, you know, finding secrets and stuff like that. But that's basically, like, at its core, that's what it is.
For those of you who don't know, Control was made by Remedy Entertainment. And if that name sounds familiar, that's because Remedy were also behind the first two Max Payne installments and...
Yeah, Matt.
Alan Wake, and also Quantum Break. So this is a Finnish studio that has a very strange idea about what a video game should be. And arguably, I think they do an interesting job, probably their best job ever, in bringing that to the fore with Control. Control won numerous awards and received, generally speaking, high acclaim. So Hircha here is the expert. I've seen a lot of Control. I haven't necessarily been able to play it. I don't have a PlayStation 4, just yet. But why don't you walk us through sort of the brief summary? Oh, by the way, spoilers for Control. We will be spoiling a lot of stuff. So if you are gonna play it, go and play it, and then come back and listen to this. But if you don't care, join us for this ride. So what would you say at its heart, Control? What is Control? Go ahead. What is Control?
Well, I don't have a definite word for it, but it is a game about certain character trying to find a missing family member and, you know, just the issues and trials and tribulations that she goes through to get to find this family member. But it's also enveloped in like a whole lot of secrecy, and you're finding out about government shenanigans, and it's all hidden behind, you know, like, I don't know what the genre would be called, but it's like horror themes, but paranormal themes as well.
Here's where I kind of jump in a little bit. I would argue that in a lot of ways, Control is a modern version of cosmic horror. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on. But for the viewers at home, if you are familiar with something like the SCP universe, the SCP Wiki, for example, the Foundation, then the game of Control will be very familiar to you, because you've got a shadowy government organization called the Federal Bureau of Control, the FBC, and they are literally kind of like the Men in Black, only instead of dealing with aliens, they deal with all kinds of weird, spooky, entities and objects. Am I right? Am I on the mark?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's less about like aliens and stuff, and more interdimensional, parallel universe type things.
The horror is not so much concrete necessarily. It a lot of the horror elements actually in Control are more abstract. It's not. You know, it's not
no,
like...
No, it's not jump in your face.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's actually ironic that you said it's concrete, because the design of a lot of the levels and the whole environment is a lot of concrete. It's a brutal architecture. So there's a lot of sharp corners and grays and, you know, browns and stuff, which is contrasted by like when you fight enemies, and that's like where all the color pops.
It's bright and vibrant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is the protagonist of Control?
It's a character named Jesse Faden.
Mm-hmm.
And she's looking for her brother Dylan, who was taken
by the FBC, the
Federal Bureau.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they were kids, because he had a sensitivity towards the objects of power within the world.
What is an object of power?
So within Control, there are altered world events where certain things happen that don't make sense.
Oh, and like
regular objects.
Like reality kind of breaks down a little bit.
Yes, within the building, within the FBC building, you see it. When you take over control points, the architecture changes, the room becomes bigger, the corners shift, and walls become ceilings and things like that. Experienced that in a hometown, and her brother Dylan had some sort of effect on a certain object of power. It was a projector. So these objects of power are normal items that you'd see in the world, but they hold lots of power. And he came in contact with that projector, somehow changed it, was sensitive to it, and it didn't affect him the way it affected everybody else in the town. So the FBC was like, we're going to use you, so come with us.
They did an X-Man ploy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they left Jesse as she is.
Mm.
Jesse, when she came to, she had this voice in her head called Polaris, and it's helping her find her brother.
Okay, all right. So the game is like mysteries within mysteries. Like, number one, like what's going on with the FBC? But number two, like, what's the deal with Jesse and her brother? Like, where is he? And
that's exactly what happened when I started playing. I was like, I have no idea what's going on here, but let me keep going. Maybe it'll reveal itself, and it does. It does eventually.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
One of my criticisms of Remedy Entertainment, I've played, you know, their Mad Max games. I've played their Alan Wake game. I haven't played Quantum Break, but it's on my list. Is that they don't really explain a lot. And even when they do, you still are like, what is going on? Someone please tell me what's going on. But you mentioned, you know, the architecture. The headquarters of the FBC is a building, which in the universe is called the Oldest House. It is specifically a brutalist building inspired, you know, I looked up some of the developer notes. It's inspired by some of the brutalist sort of era, you know, buildings from like, you know, the 50s and so on and so forth. Like this old concrete building that's just like imposing and geometric and very, intimidating. But the interesting thing about it, and something that you brought up, is that the Oldest House is also in itself kind of like a non-reality place, because it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Like something, you know, like the building itself is like, however, you know, it's a skyscraper, but it's however big. But like, according to the logic of the game, it's way bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, which is immediately it should like throw up like red flags, like, oh no, something weird is going on here.
But they don't tell you that immediately. You only experience that once you're inside.
How exactly does Jesse, you know, because I assume like if I were, you know, a victim of some kind of like weird alien crime, I couldn't just go to the FBI and be like, hey guys, you took my brother. How is Jesse brought in?
When she goes there, it's open for her. She can just walk in.
Suspicious.
And as she's walking in, we see a scene where the previous director of the FBC commits suicide. He kills himself with the service weapon, which is the weapon you get to use.
Okay.
So as he kills himself, you walk up to his office and you pick up the gun, and then you go into this thing called the astral plane. The board talks to you, and the board is like, you need to see if you're fit enough to hold the service weapon.
That's the weirdest job interview I've ever heard of.
Hired on the spot.
your previous boss killed himself, and then you had to, like, you know, I don't know, like do some DMT so that you could go to like the job interview.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
So it was already open for her when she came in, and then they were like, we see that you have the capabilities. This is the board that talks to you only in the astral plane.
Oh my goodness.
They're like, okay, yeah, you can hold the service weapon. Here you go. And that becomes...
What's so special about the service weapon?
It can only be used by the director,
mm-hmm.
and it chooses who to... It's like a Harry Potter wand. You know, the wand chooses the wizard.
Oh, no. So, oh.
But I hope
there are no turfs in the game.
No.
Oh, thank goodness.
No. Definitely not. I hope not. So, there's references in the notes, like the collectibles that you pick up in the game, that this is like an iteration of Thor's hammer, Mjolnir.
Mm-hmm. So only those who are worthy can pick it up.
Yes, that kind of vibe.
Okay, that's interesting. From what I understand, the service weapon is the only weapon that you get in the game.
Yes, it's the only weapon you get. It starts off as a pistol,
mm-hmm.
but it can change forms. Ooh. It changes into a rocket launcher.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
They have cool names. They have cool names for it. Shotgun's called Shatter. The rocket launcher's called Charge.
Oh, okay.
The sniper is called Pierce. Yeah, so...
There's no ammo. Okay. You just blasting.
You shoot, and then like if you shoot the ammo capacity, it has to reload itself. Like it's like a cooldown effect.
Oh, okay.
Like Mass Effect
1. Oh yeah, like Mass Effect 1. Now I was just about to say, like, the guns don't have an ammo count, they just have a heat meter.
Yes.
Now something that of course like has been on my mind, like, okay, sure. You're this Jesse lady, she walks into the building, she goes for the interview, she gets to pick up the gun, but like, okay, what is actually going on? Like, why did the previous guy kill himself, and why do they need a new director, and like, what's going on? Like, is there something going on at the FBC that she needs? Like, is this like an X-Files game where you go and explore, or what happens next, basically?
You find out that the FBC has been invaded by foreign force called the Hiss.
The Hiss.
Yeah.
Are they snakes?
No, they're not. There's no actual physical manifestation of the Hiss.
Interesting.
You don't actually see what a Hiss looks like. You just see a human possessed by Hiss.
Oh, okay. So, like, the people in the building are possessed by the Hiss. So you're...
Some of them.
Okay. And you gotta... Yes. And you presumably, you've gotta, like, you know, kill them. You can't, like, put them down non-lethally. Yeah. It's too late.
Well, there's a point where you try to, because you have Polaris guiding you.
Mm-hmm.
So she tries to clean the Hiss out of the people, except those people end up like evaporating into nothing.
Ooh.
So some of them, it's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah. Others, I don't know what the issue is, but like, you can remove Hiss from certain places.
You can. Okay. And
yeah.
This is actually, you know, pretty interesting. So the setup for this game, I think, is super cool. You're a person, you saw something weird when you were a kid. Years later, you go to join, you end up at this building. There's this really interesting, you know, sort of setup. The previous guy is like, oh, I'm going to kill myself. Here, take my gun. Turns out the gun is like a symbol of power, but also it's a really interesting weapon. And now the place that you've just been put in charge of is under attack from, like, an unknown, like, eldritch abomination that no one can see, but it's taking over everyone and, like, oh, no, this is bad. You know, like, what if it gets out? What if it leaves the oldest house? It would do, like, unspeakable damage to the rest of the world. So does the rest of the game basically follow the idea that you are going to be containing the Hiss?
Yes.
And you mentioned it was a Metroidvania. Could you please just elaborate? Because I'm trying to understand, like, okay, well, so you go to, like, different hubs, or, like, what's the situation?
So if nobody knows, Metroidvanias has a lot of backtracking. So you get to certain points, you might not have an item or a skill, so you have to go progress through the story or something to get what you need
to open a certain
avenue.
An example would be, say, you don't have a grappling hook, so you can't climb up a wall.
Yes. So, in Control, there are specific objects of power that give you powers.
Ooh, okay.
So, there is a levitating power. There is a power that gives you a shield. There's a total of seven. I can't remember all of them. But like as the game goes on, you can traverse things better. You can, oh, there's a power that lets you dodge, like a quick dash.
Okay, it's so like a dodge roll.
Yeah, no, not a roll. It's like a literal
dash. Oh, it's like a dash. Okay. Yeah. Like a flash step.
Yeah, yeah. So there's points where you have to take, or you have to stop those objects apart, and that's when you touch them and you use Polaris and you clean the objects, and then like the power comes to you. That's what I meant when she can do it for some things but not for others.
So what is Polaris? Like,
Polaris is like an entity within her mind that talks to her.
Is it
also a thing that we don't see?
So it's in a similar vein to like the Hiss.
Yes.
Interesting.
It's like the counter Hiss.
Counter Hiss, okay.
Except when Polaris speaks on the screen, the way they indicate it is like the screen fractures in a circular motion. You would have to see it to understand, but like if you play Quantum Break, you'll see those fractures that they do in Quantum Break.
Interesting.
It's the same ones that they do in when Polaris speaks.
I've heard that this is a game that has that really like makes use of its ray tracing. I can imagine that with all these like various special effects onto the screen, like fractures and, you know, stuff with lighting, I can imagine it's a very pretty game.
It is a pretty game, but it's also very taxing on a console.
Yeah, you know, I was about to say, like, you've beaten this game 100% of it on the PlayStation. You know, I'm not sure if necessarily, like, a PlayStation is up for ray tracing.
No. I got issues when, like, if it was a hectic firefight or something like that, it would stutter. But I'm sure on PC they should have optimized it at this point. It would be okay if you have the right machine.
Video game optimization is a dying art, honestly. But let's circle back before we go down too many tangents. So I mentioned at the beginning that I think Control is an example of cosmic horror. Cosmic horror is sometimes called eldritch horror. Are you familiar with that term?
No, the only time I've heard Eldritch is in, like, Warhammer.
Yeah. Oh, man. We are big Warhammer fans on this channel. I've made a number
Okay, great.
You know, I've made a number of videos about, like, you know, war games and stuff like that. I actually play, you know, the stuff. I've got the minis and everything, but
Okay. Yes, I remember.
Yeah.
You mentioned.
So Eldritch horror is sometimes, of course, called Lovecraftian horror, basically because of H.P. Lovecraft, who was one of the, you know, codifiers and founders of the genre. The basic premise of Eldritch horror is, I think, a very good one. Mankind is a tiny island of reason amidst a great sea of insanity that is the galaxy, right? Like, we're small and insignificant. You know, like the way you look at an ant, you know? Like, sometimes if you're, you know, outside and you see some ants, like, trying to find some sugar or whatever on the ground, like, that's mankind. Right. And the humans that are looking down on us, humans, who are, you know, the ants in this metaphor, are, like, unknowable cosmic entities. These great, like, piles of gibbering, chortling flesh and, you know, things with too many tentacles and too many eyes. you know, the core sort of conceit of this kind of cosmic horror is that humanity is, for all of our reason, for all of our logic, we're just a tiny speck in a grander, unknowable scheme that we just can't even, you know about. And a lot of the times in cosmic horror, you know, actually, you know, this is a good segue. Lovecraftian stories, cosmic horror stories, are typically, you know, the genre convention is purple prose. Lots of flowery language, you know, lots of like, oh, and then this great thing that I cannot bear to describe, you know, so on and so forth. But these are slow plotting books where the protagonists are like scholars or scientists, and they like slowly but surely piece together some truth about the reality, and then it drives them insane. But by contrast, Control is an action-centric game. Right, you've got powers, you've got the service weapon, you've got, you know, Metroidvania style, you know, gameplay elements, so you're doing a lot of backtracking, lots of traversal, you've got a gun that transforms into a rocket launcher. So
that's
a huge contrast to the way that, like, you know, typically eldritch horror stories are presented. So, you know, my question to you is, like, why do you think Control does this? Like, it could have been, you know, fairly easy for Control to be, like, a spooky, Lovecraftian horror kind of game and not give the player any weapons at all. But why do you think they do this?
It might be a way to pull the audience, because, you know, like you said, the Lovecraftian stuff is slow, it takes long, and Remedy, even though they're good storytellers, they still like to make games that are action-centric. I mean, if we look at their previous stuff from Jump, it is story-centric, but you still need to keep a player engaged, and I think that's what they, what I would say their plot or their goal is to always have you engaged through the gameplay, but, you know, still questioning what's happening in the story, just to keep that pace going. Because I think if Control was just this game where we're exploring the oldest house and like nothing really happens, and then, like you said, Jesse goes insane, people would be like, and then?
Yeah. You know, one of the conventions of a lot of like Lovecraftian games, actually, because a lot of them are like that, you know, is that the screen starts to shake and your character starts to go, you know? And it's like, come on, man, you know, just like get a grip of yourself for like 2 seconds. And, you know, I think it's, you know, you pose a very interesting sort of question. Like, video games are very interactive. Like, they're an interactive medium. You know, some people might make an argument that a game that has very little gameplay is not really a game. That, you know, that's a fight for another day. But, like, it is an interesting point that, you know, like, if this was more of a conventional Lovecraft story or, you know, a conventional Lovecraft game, there wouldn't really be all that much to do. But the fact that Control is a combat game, it's an action game, right, it does actually give you a lot to do. And to some extent, maybe that's, like, required by the medium, because if it wasn't, then I don't think as many people would play it.
Yeah, I also would have had mainstream appeal if it didn't have that action-centric thing. Because, I mean, we all, it's like, activate my monkey brain, let me shoot things. So they put it in, you know, because it's what the game probably needed.
Yeah,
for it to sell, to get all these awards. Also, I mean, it was nominated for action games. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've played a lot of these Lovecraftian horror games because I like them. Because I, you know, I like the Lovecraftian stories. But the problem that I've always found with them is that they really struggle to engage you. If they don't have a compelling, scary story, if they don't have like good atmosphere and stuff like that, they really don't have much of a game. And like something, you know, I like we're going to come back to this, you know, a couple of times through the course of this podcast. But like, does the name of the game Control, does the fact that you have the ability to kill these enemies, to fight them, does that actually, like, how do you feel about that as like a theme? You know, does it actually undermine the fact that Control is a horror game, that you can, like, you've got, you know, skill trees and, you know, Metroidvania, and like you can kill the enemies. Like, usually in the Lovecraftian horror sense, you can't do anything to the enemies, or, you know, the Cthulhu or whatever will just like destroy the world. There's nothing you can do. But in this game, you have control in a sense. You can do something.
Yes, but I think with this game, it's more the process of playing is you gaining control. It's not like as you begin, you have all the control. It's more, it starts off feeling like a horror because you don't have the power or the abilities to do the things that are needed.
Mm-hmm.
And as you play, you start gaining those powers. There's another game I played where it felt like that. It was Prey.
Oh, yeah, I played Prey.
Where you start off and it feels like a horror. Everything is scary. Like the sounds, the enemies, everything is scary. And then as soon as you learn how to play, or like you gain the skills, it's like, oh, now I'm not afraid anymore. So maybe at the beginning it's action horror, and then towards the end it's just pure action. It's just, I'm the badass, and, you know, you're gonna deal with me now.
Yeah, I think that's a good contrast, because typically in the way that a normal Lovecraftian story goes is that the character gets less and less sort of agency. You know, by the end of the story, usually the guy's like a gibbering wreck. Who's like, I've seen terrible things. I, you know, I gotta shoot heroin or something to forget.
What?
Yeah. Look, back in Lovecraft Day, everyone was doing drugs. Like, cocaine was everywhere. Like,
Sigmund Freud.
Yeah, you know, like, there was laudanum, there was opium, there was morphine. Like, a lot of the times, Lovecraftian stories end with a character, like, either going insane and killing themselves, or, like, just doing a lot of drugs and ending up in like an asylum or whatever.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
But in this game, it's like, okay, well, the longer the game goes on, the more control you have, right?
Yes.
You know, that is interesting, because I think also in a way, like, it contrasts really nicely to Jessie's sort of personal struggle, right? Because you said that her mission in this game isn't really to deal with the Hiss, right? That's kind of like the instrumental thing. But her real yes. objective is to find her brother, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting more of these powers, getting more of these abilities is how she gets control of her life, you know? Because in the beginning, you told me that she was, you know, a subject to a weird paranormal experience, but she had no control over it because she was a child. But now that she's yes. a grown-up, now that she's got, you know, these powers and this weapon, now she can actually take control of her life. And maybe that's like the thematic parallel here.
Yes, yes. In fact, at the end of the game, she literally says, "I am Jessie Fate, the director of the Federal Bureau of Control." She says it like, finally, I am the director.
I'm
going to correct things.
She has the look into the camera moment and just be like, I'm the captain now.
Yeah, yeah. Look at me. That's literally what she says.
Yeah, that's
at the end of the thing.
That's yeah. very interesting. I think something that also, you know, we have to talk about it is like the oldest house. This is one of the reasons why I think if you are on the fence about playing Control and you have the opportunity to play it, I recommend that you go and do it, because the setting is very interesting, right? So again, you know, a lot of the traditional Lovecraftian horror stuff, a lot of the way that it worked was, generally speaking, you would have these far off exotic, you know, places, and they would be like full of like strange religions and mystic idols, but all of the racism that is implied here, like, let's you know, lay this on the table. Lovecraft is not a nice person, right? He was not a good man. And he would have these, you know, ideas about, oh yeah, every, like, you know, like the dark corners of the world, like, of, you know, in Asia and Africa and South, like, there's all these weird people doing, you know, weird rituals and
weird things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He has these weird ideas, you know, terrible ideas, honestly. Mm-hmm. but the one of the central themes is that, like, a lot of these places are hidden from the world. They're strange places. Like, to go to a temple, you know, to dedicated to Cthulhu is to go literally into like an alien realm. But by contrast, right. Control takes place literally in the modern world and literally inside an office building.
Yes, in the middle of New York.
In the middle of New York. So that's like yeah. such a huge inversion, right?
Right.
If the Hiss weren't there, it would literally just be, you know, a regular, you know, sort of like more office kind of experience in a way. And I think there's like, why do you think they did this? Because they could have made a game like, oh yeah, we're going to like the deepest, you know, part of the ocean or whatever, and we're gonna, you know, but they chose very specifically to set it in a building in the most, one of the biggest cities in the world, in a setting that is very mundane.
Well, I would have to say, from a development point, Remedy don't really do foreign places like that. Alan Wake was at a creek, an American creek. Max Payne's like in a New York type city.
It is kind of funny because they are from Finland.
Yeah, they are from Finland. And they did put that Finnish touch, Finnish with double N, into the game. There is a little bit of the Finland in the game, in a character.
Oh.
But the thing that also gets me about how you're saying it's like it's mundane and, you know, it's right in the middle of nowhere, once you get inside, also the characters, the people that work at the FBC, even though this weird stuff is happening to them, they behave like it's really normal. They're like, it's just another day at the job, you know, people are dying, there's this entity we don't know about, the director's dead, and they're just like, hey, we have to fix it.
Yeah,
let's get to work.
Yeah, it's like yeah, it's like, you know your coworker is like split in two, floating from the ceiling, but then also like there's a photocopy machine that's jammed on like floor two.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly like that.
There's
one side quest where a team of rangers are like the armed forces of the FBC,
the soldiers
are trying to stop the Hiss. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one guy is injured on the floor, and he's like, can you help me? My medic is stuck in another place, and, you know, he's the only one who has, like, the morphine and the stuff that can help me.
Ah, so see, morphine. Like, okay. Ah.
and you're like, okay, cool, let me help you out. And do that quest, you're in a room full of clocks, and apparently there's like an object of power that's just spitting these clocks, and that's how the whole team got injured. They were just killed
by clocks.
Overrun by clocks. Yeah, and then the medic is like, oh my gosh, my whole team's dead. What am I gonna do? And you tell him, no, there's one guy who needs your help. He's still alive. Let's go get him. When we get there, that guy has been taken over by the Hiss.
Ah, of course, naturally.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a way in the game where like the people wear these vests called Hadron suits, I think, and that stops the Hiss from getting, like, possessing them.
Oh, okay. So it's like a barrier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so when you say frequency, so you mean the Hiss is more of like a sound, not like a goo thing.
I don't know. No, it's not goo. It's not goo.
All right, we can rule out goo.
When the Hiss are there, like the room turns red, and you hear like these screeches and stuff. That's why I say it's like a frequency. It's like, you know, when you hear a high frequency, there's like that. So it feels like that whenever you're fighting enemies possessed by the Hiss. It feels like they were taken over by something that just creeped in through a brainwave or through their ears or something.
Hmm. Okay. Mm. And, you know, that's really interesting, right? Because a lot of the times with Lovecraft's work, right, and the way that we kind of conceive of Eldritch Horror, I think there is a problem in the sense that I think modern people are just like really desensitized to horrifying things, right? Because, you know, Lovecraft, when he was writing, it was enough to be like, oh, I've seen a thing. I can't bear to describe it because my mortal hands are insufficient. And then people are like, whoa, dude, that's the scariest thing ever. You know? But
yeah. But
today it's like, you know, there are like Cthulhu dating sims. There are.
I did not know that. I need to play one.
yeah, there are. I think, you know, a curse will be upon this channel, but I think I will put a link to one in the description of this video when it goes out.
Okay.
Just so that people can see it. But yeah, there are, you know, Cthulhu dating sims. I think, like, people are like, yeah, you know, there are Cthulhu plushies. For us nowadays, I feel like we have become more inured, like, you know, have you seen Stranger Things?
Yes.
Yeah. So the Gorgon, right? So the Gorgon is a creature in a lot of ways that would fit into many of the Lovecraftian ideas. It's a creature from another dimension. It's not like an alien, but it's like a cross-dimensional being, and it has all these terrible powers. So in a Lovecraft story, naturally, you would never see it. It would never really be described concretely. He would use like, you know, like he'd use a word like Stygian, you know, to describe it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if someone saw it, they would go and, you know, he would write, oh, and he saw this terrible beast and it sent him into a mad flight into the night. And, you know, whereas nowadays it's like, oh yeah, so there's an 11-year-old girl, you know, there's like a teenage girl who's got psychic powers and she's going to fight this thing. It's so interesting seeing the degree to which we have evolved as a society to basically just, yeah, we're desensitized. But like the way that you describe it, you know, it sounds like there is something more to this, like the fact that the game doesn't really like it sounds like it doesn't really explain what the Hiss kind of is, you know.
They never actually say the Hiss is from this place and their objective is to do this. That never happens. You just find out how they got there and what they're doing.
Yeah.
Why or what for, we don't know.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you know, why would I have to explain why the printer is broken, you know? If the printer is broken, we just gotta we just have to unjam it or whatever. Like, it's that kind of mentality. Yeah. And I really think it's very interesting that so many of the objects of power are like mundane objects. One that I found to be very memorable is that the fridge that will kill you if you break eye contact with it.
Yeah, if you don't look at it.
it's very similar to an SCP called SCP-173, which will like, it's this statue, and if you blink, it'll move towards you, and if it gets close enough to you, it'll snap your neck if you stop looking at it. So, there are lots of connections with SCP, and I'll get to that in a second, but like, the FBC are they, here's a sort of a question, is their job primarily to stop these things, or do they try to study them?
They try to study them.
So the SCP connection is even, how do, so, you know, that kind of explains why they aren't just all like soldiers and stuff like that. They must be like scientists and, you know, other people.
Yes, yes. In fact, the guy, the main guy who the main researcher is the guy who voices Alan Wake. His name is Dr. Darling. And you see videos of him throughout the game where he's like, we found this object of power. And he's really fascinated. And he's like, these are new avenues of science that we've never heard of. You know, he's going in with that optimism, but none of that caution. And that clearly leads to the mess that has been created now.
You know, it's really interesting.
When you're playing through the game.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that, because there's another kind of like connection in a way to a lot of the Lovecraft stuff. So in Lovecraft's day, right, we're talking like the early 20th century. Science, in my opinion, was still very much in its like, you know, take a hit of the blunt, what if aliens were real sort of phase. You know, you know, they were doing awful things. The Victorians were, you know, the Victorian ancestors of Lovecraft were like making everything up. People, you know, in those days were still doing things like phrenology, which is garbage pseudoscience. Phrenology, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is the idea that you can measure someone's intelligence by looking at their skull shape. It is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is incredibly dumb, and it was used, unfortunately, by terrible racists to justify their weird, stupid opinions. Even though, by their own standards, many of them would fall under the same standards that they are, you know, projecting onto people of color. But I think the point was that a lot of these scientists, a lot of scientific knowledge was like, oh, you know, we're inventing like the steam engine, and you know, we've got like telegrams and things like that. But on the other hand, people are like, oh yeah, space is full of a magic thing called the ether, and you can like fly a ship through space. You know, if you had like a big enough, you know, rocket or whatever, it's like, yeah. So science is in this weird, like, it's exactly in the way that you described it, actually. It's like, hey, there's a lot of enthusiasm, but a lot of that enthusiasm is, generally speaking, misplaced. Right. Nowadays, we know a lot better with science, but it seems like Control takes this kind of approach where it's like, yeah, even though we have all the science, it still doesn't help us. You know, us knowing about, you know, quantum mechanics or whatever doesn't stop us from, like, being, you know, falling prey to like a giant unknowable entity called the Hiss. It's very interesting that there's kind of this parallel where, even though we've got all the science, it's a modern day setting, you know, they've, you know, cars, radios, etc., etc., our science still can't help us. And I think that's very interesting, because I think Lovecraft kind of was writing at an era when science was very much still in a lot of its infancy. And people were still they still, you know, were cursed by ignorance. It's, you know, it's a theme of Lovecraft's work that, like, ignorance is like this blessing because you don't know how terrible the world is. Okay, well, nowadays we have space telescopes where, you know, hypothetically, hopefully not Elon Musk will one day go to Mars. You know, I don't want indentured servitude on Mars, electric boot. I don't want Red Faction to be a real thing. Because you know that Red Faction would 100% be a thing if Elon Musk was in charge of, you know, Mars.
there was actually a video I watched about what would happen if humans landed on Mars and they were like, what if we send a team of multiracial people and then we get there and then the white guy just uses the N-word on the black dude and then the black dude's like, but you can't say that. And he's like, who's going to stop me? The people on Earth.
Yeah, you know, I just feel like we shouldn't be, you know, maybe this is South Africa's big problem. We have this terrible problem of exporting like sci-fi villains. You know,
right.
In Titanfall 2, I did a video on this, actually on the channel, about like how the primary antagonist in Titanfall 2 is an Afrikaans guy. It's an Afrikaans guy from Joburg.
I forgot about that. And he's the guy in Apex.
Yeah.
He bought the game.
He's the guy in Apex. It's just like, oh my goodness. So we just can't escape this, huh? It's just going to stay with us.
So that's our narrative. to.
Yeah, it's just going to stay with us hundreds of years into the future. You know, people are like traveling through space and there's still an Afrikaans guy from Joburg who's like a psycho murderer. You know?
I mean, it's there in control because our architecture is also a little brutalist. So
a lot
of the buildings here in SA are.
If you've ever gone through, you know, like the you know, downtown Joburg, those buildings are definitely brutalist.
Yes.
Actually, you know, this is another tangent, but like, I could totally see a version of Control just like taking place in like the Department of Home Affairs or something.
Because you'll get lost there.
Yeah, like you enter.
Lose control.
Yeah, you enter the building and it's like a parallel multi-dimensional space. And like, there's just like someone who's just like, sir, the system is down.
We need your help. Here's the service weapon. Please help us get the system back online. And it's like, yeah, I see it.
And all you're there is to like, just renew a license. It's like, ah, man. Every time.
I think we have a game on our hands.
Yeah, you know, like, Remedy should hire us to do the storyboarding on their next game, which is like, Control 2, Electric Boogaloo, but it's just in South Africa. I want to get us back on track. So, you know, the fact that the FBC are trying to study, you know, what's going on, you know, with these altered reality, altered world events, right, the AWEs, you know, that's very reminiscent to the SCP Foundation, who are trying to understand, you know, the titular SCPs, you know, these anomalous materials. Not all of them are, you know, objects or creatures. Some of them are events. Some of them are, like, places. It's a huge parallel. I think in a lot of ways, like, SCP is the way that we interpret a lot of, like, or at least it laid the groundwork for the way that we interpret, like, Eldritch horror, cosmic horror. And so it's only natural that something like Control would want to mirror it. Because, like, I do believe you're totally correct. I don't think they would have been able to sell this game to the scale that they sold it to with a more traditional Lovecraft story. Like, have you heard of The Sinking City?
I think I've heard of this game.
Yeah, The Sinking City is Control, but like I would argue in a lot of ways way worse. Because it's also a third-person shooter game, right? You play a detective who's going to like a 1920s, you know, city, and you deal with spooky monsters, but it's a much more traditional Lovecraft story. And at the end, it's like you either go mad or you kill yourself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how the game ends.
Yeah, that's how the game ends. It's like you either jump off a cliff and sacrifice yourself to spare the world from knowing the true horror of Cthulhu or whatever, or you usher in the apocalypse because of some, you know, vaguely explained reason. Like, and, you know, the gunplay is really bad. Like, the enemies are kind of, it's not a good game. It arguably, you know, they tried to reinvent the gameplay but still kept the same old sort of storytelling conventions and stuff like that, and it's just not good. Well, it's okay. Like, I know I'm ragging on it, but it's really not as good as Control, because Control, not only does it modernize the gameplay, right, but it also understands why it needs to modernize the gameplay, right? Because, you know, no one wants to roll around with this, you know, in like with 1920s guns.
No.
It's not. You want to have an interesting experience. Like I would argue that in a lot of ways, Control does everything that Sinking City did badly. It Control does it, you know, well. Granted, I would probably play a game like Sinking City because I like those kinds of, you know, settings. But like Sinking City didn't, you know, make, you know, didn't get like a bunch of game awards, and it didn't sell like, I think Control sold over like 2 million copies. Probably more. So yeah, it's super, you know, important, I think, to understand that like you have to adapt to the times, right?
Right.
You can't stay back in the dark ages. You know,
preferably. I mean, you said it yourself that like as a society we changed and people are desensitized to these things. So if you're gonna tell me a story and I'm using an interactive medium, and you're gonna tell me about this outer worldly thing, like the language you said they were using, the Stygian thing that I know nothing about, and I'm playing an interactive game, I'm going to be curious as to what is this thing? How do I get to it?
Because
that's how our minds go as we play games. So,
yeah, you know,
I understand.
People have played Final Fantasy. Like, there's nothing that fundamentally you could put in a Lovecraftian game that isn't more terrifying than you know, something, you know, whatever you think that you can just see, you know, on a like a DeviantArt page or whatever, you know, like it's
DeviantArt.
Yeah, it's like people are desensitized. What makes those Lovecraftian traditional ones scary is atmosphere, right? They have a very specific atmosphere, and they sell you on that atmosphere really, really well. But a lot of games don't do that, and so you know, it's like a tentacle monster is just not that frightening anymore. You know, we're totally inured to it. But again, I want us to circle back. You know, we're getting lost in the mind mind labyrinth. but this is good. You know, this is what makes bite marks worth listening to. Something that, you know, speaking of society changing, like something that is very important, I think, in the way that control handles itself is, well, basically, Lovecraft was kind of a bigot. Well, not kind of. He was a huge bigot, and his stories have kind of two modes. It's a person of color, almost always a man, who is depicted as like shady and villainous or primitive and barbaric, versus a super well-read, introverted, you know, white dude who's like invariably a scientist or whatever. And then women are kind of mostly absent. If there's a female character in his stories, they're not really characters; they're more like props. Oh, you know, these women and their weak emotions, you know, whatever. Yeah, right. Yeah, I've read these stories. They're not, you know, they're not very good. Please, for all that is holy, don't look up what Lovecraft named his cat.
Okay. Yeah. Now I have to do it. So.
But
I'm going to.
But
okay.
Yeah. Lovecraftian horror was a man's club, right? It was basically a white man's club. But control. Whoa. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that, but yeah.
No one is. Viewers at home, please spare yourself. That's the real unknowable, like, Lovecraftian entity. Knowing what he named his cat. That'll do, like, psychic damage to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, control breaks this mold. Number one, there are many different characters. I would argue that control is actually very female centric because number one, you're a woman, you're Jessie, but there are also many other characters, female characters who play prominent roles, you know, in the story.
Yes. In fact, my favorite secondary character is the woman, Helen Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
You meet her very early in the game and she's the military.
She's like the head of the Rangers.
Head. Yes. In the FBC. And then there's this other optimistic researcher. Her name is, I think, Emily mm-hmm. Pope. I'm not sure. Yes, it's her, Emily Pope. Darling is the doctor. I just got confused because Darling,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's
unisex type name. And then there's also another researcher which like delve through the game, a British lady who's like a professor and was hired by the FBC, and she studies like. Fungi.
Oh, that's yeah. Something that I found really interesting, as a tangent, is that while this whole hiss invasion is going on, there's an entirely separate invasion by like a fungus species.
yes, down, it's like in the lower floors of the building, and it's like zombie type enemies that you have to fight in there, and they create like the smell that makes you hungry and the fungi turn into those. Yeah,
it's like a Last of Us situation. No.
Yes, but I didn't like Last of Us, so
yeah, I don't know. I feel like the whole dad protecting a kid vibe is really overplayed. One of these days I'm gonna do a video about like a conspiracy theory that like one of the Last of Us multiplayers was actually like the way that we got like PUBG and you know those kinds of games. There's like some conspiracy lore that you know we're gonna do there, but like circling back.
Ooh, I want to get that episode.
An episode on the hidden sort of origins of these kinds of battle royale games, I think would be very fun. But anyway, circling back, right. So like, it breaks the mold in a lot of ways. Pardon the pun. and like, how do you feel? Is this representation done well? You mentioned that there was a Finnish character. What are they like? Like is does the well just generally is the game's representation good or is it more ham-fisted? No, do they have like an Avengers moment where all the female characters are like lining up?
No,
they don't.
That doesn't happen. It's just that you know the head of that Helena, mm-hmm. the Helen Marshall lady I mentioned is a black woman,
mm-hmm.
so it make that you know that theme of strong black women, and I was like, I was a little off about that, but at least she's still a strong character. But there's nothing there that's like stereotypy in terms of the way the females are represented.
Yeah, you know,
the Finnish. Oh
no, no, I was just gonna say, like, from what I've seen, it looks like for the most part they're just well-written characters who they made a deliberate choice to make them women, you know, probably knowing the history of sort of the genre conventions, but they didn't not make them good characters, right? They put the work in.
Yes. Yes, they did. No one's like one dimension.
Yeah.
They have personalities and everything. And the Finnish part is, there's a point in the game where you need guidance, and you come across a janitor named Ati.
Ati.
And Ati is voiced by a Finnish voice actor, and he does speak Finnish. I don't know what's the official language of Finland, I'm not sure. But he does speak the native language at certain points in the game. And he's like the wise old man that guides you through everything mm-hmm. in the game. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, that's pretty interesting. Obviously, the game takes place in America, but, like, I think this is the first time that I can recall a Remedy game having an actual Finnish character in it. And it's kind of interesting.
The
like
developers did say they wanted, they've always wanted to put a Finnish element in their games, mm-hmm. and they found out that they found that this was the perfect one to do that.
You know, it's kind of funny. Like, they're a Finnish game development company, but if they made a game more about, like, Finland, it wouldn't sell nearly as well.
It would not.
Yeah.
It would not. I really don't think so. I mean, maybe they'll make a game of Vikings or Norse gods.
Have you heard of a game called Noita?
Wait. This is that roguelike, the 2D one,
yes,
with the wizard who uses many elements.
Who uses wands. Yeah.
Yes, you use wands, and then, like, you can create fire.
Yeah, you've got, like, physics and effects and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, Noita is developed by a Finnish company.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually has Finnish mythological, like, references in it. So, like,
Okay.
I think that's one of the few games that's, like, you know, a very... Oh, this is like Finnish mythology and stuff like that, which I think is pretty cool. You know, I think Finland has a very interesting sort of mythology and stuff like that. But, like, yeah, you know, they're making it, you know, Alan Wake is kind of like an American pastiche, you know?
Yeah.
It's these people who aren't American who are making it, you know, like how the spaghetti westerns were made by Italians.
Yes.
It's that kind of thing. But it's, you know, popular in America. I think that's, you know, that's really interesting. I do want to... I do want to sort of begin to start putting a bow into this.
Okay.
So I, you know, because we've gone for an hour, I'm sure we could continue, you know, talking, because, you know, maybe it would be a fun idea to do a whole, like, synopsis of the story, or maybe talk about, like, a specific... Actually, you know, viewers, please, if you'd like to have, you'd like us to have a Hirsha on the Hirsha... I'm sorry, the pronunciation is... Hecha. If you'd like to have a Hecha on again, please let us know. I'd love to talk more about Control, you know, you could do a deep dive, maybe a little bit more. But just sort of like to round off the episode, because we are almost out of time. I have two questions. One, what is your favorite sequence in the game? I'll tell you which one I found to be very interesting. And two, what do you think about the enemies? Which one was your favorite enemy? But before that, my favorite sequence that I've seen of the game is a flashback sequence, or like a time loop, where Jesse, instead of being the director, she's like a secretary or a clerk, and she just says, like, keep over and over, like, processing papers, filing paperwork, fetching coffee. And I really like that sequence because, like, number one, it takes away all the controls. So you don't have this badass, you know, special agent with a gun and stuff, like, you're just a secretary, right? And it, like, takes all the control away from you. Like, it strips you of it. And I think that's a really good moment in the story, you know, to have the players, like, have a low before they, you know, have to do another high. What about you? What is your favorite sequence in the game?
All right. So, my favorite sequence is there's a maze in the game,
mm-hmm.
And like an astral maze. And when you try and go through it first time, you just loop back to the beginning.
Okay.
And then Ati gives you his Walkman with the headphones. And for some strange reason, that does not make the maze loop back. Like, it doesn't distort the path towards the end of the maze. And when you put it on, it is music by a Finnish band. It is a metal band, and they're singing like a song made for control.
Huh.
And in that sequence, it's the opposite of your favorite sequence where you lose all control. It's total badass. You're just going and shooting everything.
It's like the power-up moment.
It's just like, oh, this man just screaming in your ears, and you're just like, oh, yes, now it's time to kill. So
that reminds me. That's my favorite. There is a moment in one of the Alan Wake games. I think it's the first Alan Wake game. Where you're on for whatever reason, you end up at a stage, and like there's like a rock concert that was gonna happen, but then you like trigger all the fireworks and you're fighting like all the enemies. That's like your badass moment where you're listening to like heavy metal or rock music, and you're just, you know, I feel like that's the thing they do, a Remedy. That's
If I'd played the game, if I'd played Alan Wake, I would have picked it up immediately.
Yeah.
right.
Okay, so that.
And what was the second?
The second was like, which of the enemies do you think stands out to you the most? I know you don't like the mold. Which one do you like the most, maybe? Or what's your favorite enemy?
Favorite. Okay, so there's this type of shielded enemy who throws... Oh, telekinesis is one of the skills you can also get, but he also throws things back at you.
Okay.
And there's like a certain dance on how to defeat him. You have to get rid of the shield by throwing something at him. But when he's open in that moment with no shield, that's also when he's most volatile to throw things back at you. So there's like this cool dance of shoot, dodge, throw that I really, really love with that enemy. I actually forgot the name of the enemy, but there's an actual name.
Okay.
There's an actual name for it. And when you first face them, they are a nightmare. Because you have no idea what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But as the game goes on, you're like, okay, we can do this. They throw like three of them at you at the same time, and you can stop them.
Yeah. You know, it's a theme, I think. Like, if I would make an argument here, like, I think one of Control's biggest theme is that you get control. You take control of the situation. You know, like you said it yourself, at the end of the game, you're like, I'm the director now. And it in a lot of ways, it's the anti-Lovecraft story, because Lovecraft stories are all about losing control, you know, but this game is all about getting it. It's about taking control in an impossible situation, the kind of thing that I don't think Lovecraft would have ever, you know, conceived of as being possible, let alone by a woman, you know. But I think that is a very good sort of cap, you know, like, oh, control is basically the process of getting control. You start off with no control, but by the end you end up with a lot of it. And I think in a lot of ways it has mirrored how we come to understand as a society, sort of like cosmic horror. Cosmic horror still exists, right? The unknowable nature of like reality is still there. Like, we don't know, you know, if there could be, you know, parallel dimensions with like the Hiss. But but even though we do not necessarily know, we are way more capable of taking control than we used to be, I think.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's a good place to cap off this conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a lot of fun.
Me too.
This was a great episode. I hope the viewers at home listen to like it. Keisha, do you have any things that you would like to shout out?
Oh, no, not really. I mean, I do have a Twitter that active. It's... twitch.tv/KAYCIF3R.
Sure.
I use that handle for everything. Twitter, Instagram.
I will include a link, or I will include links to all of your stuff in the description of the video. If you guys are interested, check out his stuff. I'm sure it'll be good. He 100% completed Control. That's got to count for something.
Yeah. Only took me about like, what did I say? 25 to 30 hours? That's how long it takes? 200%? Yeah.
Considering that like Alan Wake can be beaten in like 8 to 10 hours, that's a pretty chunk. That's a pretty hefty, you know, chunk of game.
For me, it's rookie numbers because, you know, I play 100 games.
Yeah.
And I have 100% of those.
You've also played Assassin's Creed?
Yeah, I've completed that. I recently finished Final Fantasy 15.
Oof, that's a slog.
Yeah, and I'm doing God Eater 3 now. So.
Ooh, okay, yeah. So yeah. You've got the solid gamer credentials. Okay. So thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Be safe out there. Wear your masks. Take your vaccines if you can get them. And be safe. Bye, everyone.
Bye.